No one plans for hair loss, but through Hims, you can take the next step with confidence. Access treatments made with clinically proven ingredients like finasteride and minoxidil to stop hair loss and regrow hair in 3 to 6 months. No waiting rooms, no hoops, just ingredients with a track record of results. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hims brings expert care straight to you, with 100% online access to personalized treatments that put your goals first. For simple online access to personalized and affordable care for hair loss, ED, weight loss, and more, visit hims.com/hailmary. That's hims.com/hailmary for your free online visit. hims.com/hailmary. Individual results may vary, based on studies of topical and oral minoxidil and finasteride. Prescription required. See website for full details, restrictions, and important safety information.
All righty. Welcome back, everybody. We're just talking some college basketball. Now that we are back on another Wisco Fanatics Wednesday, we're going to be starting with college basketball. So we have 2 Badger games, and we have 4 Bucks games to go through today. So we are still on basketball today. So we're going to hit the intro, and we're going to start talking Badgers.
Welcome to another live episode of the Wisco Fanatics Show, where we discuss the Packers, Bucks, Brewers, Badgers football, and basketball from an optimistic perspective. Wisco Fanatics is brought to you by Cardboard Legacy, Wisconsin's most complete sports card shop. Buy, sell, grade, and consign all at their location in Oshkosh.
Alrighty, so like I said, we have 2 Wisconsin Badger games to talk about today. Now, Jake and I, we've said this tons of times, that we are bad news first kind of guys. So thankfully, we get to get our bad news out of the way first. And let's start with the Oregon game. Obviously, a frustrating game to lose. But let's talk about the players, and then let's just talk about the game as a whole. So, Jake, I'll let you go first this week. Normally, I start with Mike. So I'll let Jake go first, throw a curveball into this week. But, Jake, start with the bigs against Oregon.
Okay. I'm going to try my best to be nice, but I was pretty pissed off on Saturday. So I'm going to say the nice things first. I'm going to switch it up. I'm going to say the nice things first, then I'm going to get into it. So Nolan Winter at 11 points, 3 rebounds. He was 5 for 8, 1 for 2 from 3. Stephen Crowell, 12 points, 6 rebounds, an assist, and 6 turnovers. And one gigantic ass-whooping for an entire half. 5 of 8, 0 of 2 from 3. Amos, 3 points, kind of really a non-factor in this game. Gilmore, 4 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists. He did his thing. He's a hustle guy. That we've been saying that all year, saying that for 3 years, I think, actually. So here's a few things. Badgers were up 66-57 with 3:16 left in this game. They scored 0 points. They had 0 free throw attempts, and they had 5 turnovers. Some of them very egregious.
Yeah.
Biggest downfall for this Wisconsin Badgers team, which got fixed in the Washington game, and we will get into context when we get to that game as well. The Badgers really, really struggle with top-tier bigs. And this is the first game, and Tyler said we were talking about college basketball. Some of that discussion was Michigan State, Maryland, Michigan. This was the first game since the Michigan game early in the year. Also, the first home loss since that game, because we have 2 home losses now, one to Michigan and one to Oregon. That really the big men kind of dominated the game, and it wasn't on the Badgers side of things, sadly. The Badgers had Nate Biddle in foul trouble in the first half, where they held a 12-point lead right at halftime. The second half, not attacking him is the thing that really got to me.
They did, but they did it twice. One time Crowell scored, and one time he got an offensive foul, and then they stopped doing it.
Yeah,
well, they got away from it.
Yeah,
what I was gonna
after that offensive foul.
That's a good point. But really, I wanted everybody to go at him, put him in pick and rolls, force him into a lot of action. Like, you gotta force the issue with a guy when you understand that he controls everything on that team emotionally. When he gets going, everybody else on that team gets going.
They showed the net rating like 7 times. That like
it was insane
with him on and like minus 18 with him off. Like, try to get him off the floor.
Yeah. So he finished the game with 23 points, 6 rebounds. He had 6 points in overtime. Winter and Crowell combined had 23 points. So he matched their offensive output. He absolutely dominated the second half. And he was just playing old school bully ball, man. And it's something where and this is back-to-back Saturdays now where I've kind of questioned Stephen Crowell's defense down low, his post defense down low. And it's not even that he's bad position or he's not using his length correctly. He's literally just getting overpowered, like plain and simple, to be honest with you. Yeah. And it's something that we're going to have to watch for when we get into the Big Ten tournament here pretty soon. I believe like 2 weeks away from now. It's like the 12th, right? Something like that, right? We'll have to watch it, see what kind of matchups we get. If we match up against Oregon again or we match up against Michigan, that's going to be definitely something to take note of. We're going to have to watch who we match up against in the NCAA tournament because that's going to be something that can come back to bite us in the ass. I've talked about rebounding, and really it's just a physicality thing, I think.
Yeah.
This team is really fun offensively. They can shoot a lot of threes. They can get up and down the floor. That's something we haven't seen. It's new. It's fresh. We all love it, right? You still have to play with a purpose. You still have to go out there and play physical, make them feel you. That's something that's a basketball term, make them feel you, Tyler. I don't know how many times we've heard that from Geigel, but
oh, yeah.
literally printed on my brain. But that was really the biggest disappointment for me was, you know, the lack of get your lick back. You know, like, it's okay to let them score and be physical with you. You can do it back. Mm-hmm. And that's really the thing that kind of bothered me. And it didn't seem like Crowell wanted to punch back. This kind of seemed like he, when he gets punched a couple of times, figuratively, he kind of just curls up into a ball and doesn't exist after that.
This game specifically, I felt kind of similarly about John Blackwell also.
Yes.
Because he started off really aggressive driving to the rim. And mm-hmm. then Oregon's defense kind of kept pushing him out.
Yeah.
And they let him, he let them push him into two missed threes. And they just kept him on the perimeter and he stayed out there. He didn't really try to assert himself in this game. And he was 0 for 6 from the 3-point line.
Yeah.
And to me, that is entirely dictated by Oregon's defense. And
yeah.
There's credit to Oregon for doing that, but. And we're going to get to it where I'm going to say the exact opposite when we get to Washington, but this game, specifically the Oregon game, John Blackwell needs to be that aggressive, assertive slasher that we know he's capable of being. Other than that, he was 2 for 9 from the field. So he was 2 for 3 from the 2 points and had 6 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, 5 turnovers. And one of them was with 17 seconds left and they were up by 3 on an inbound where he was looking up trying to break the press instead of catching the ball first. And ball dribbled off his leg. Now I'm going to talk about the end of the game situation when we finish talking about the players, but John Tanjay, he did a really good job to dig in defensively, help the Badgers get a couple stops, hit a 3 that was part of a 9-0 run. That was part of the fun part of the first half, scored another tough layup. And another 3 to push the to a 14-0 run, had a steal and a slam to put the Badgers up by 13 points at one point. He scored 12 points in 3 minutes and 43 seconds. He had 16 points in the final 8:42 of the first half. And then in the second half, he did not get enough touches in this game, in my opinion. Especially in the last 10 minutes of the game when Oregon went on their run, the ball got sticky on the Badgers' side of the offense. And John Tanjay was not the guy that it was getting sticky with. And if the ball is not going to move around, the guy that I want to have the ball in his hand is John Tanjay. So that's that. He only had six points in the second half in overtime. Was just 2 for 10 from the 3-point line, which is obviously not good. But only 2 for 2 from the free throw line. That to me too, when Jake brings up the fact that they didn't have any free throws hardly at all in the second half, John Tanjay is the guy you need to get the ball to get you to the free throw line. He's one of the best free throw shooters in the country.
Yep.
So we need to be going to John Tanjay more. And it's not just me saying that to, pump up the wings so that I can talk more on Wednesdays, but it's not a secret that John Tanjay is the Badgers' best player right now.
Mm-hmm.
He finished with 22 points, 7 rebounds, 2 assists, only the 2 turnovers and 2 steals. Mike, I'll let you talk about the guards and then we can talk about this game as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. So, obviously you guys pointed out it was basically a tale of two halves in this game. Not the way we wanted to end, but I'll start with Max Klesmit. definitely had a slow start to this game, but in 27 minutes, yeah, I was impressed how he opened the second half. He canned two threes for us to really get us going to start the second half. So, you know, it helped us extend that lead to 1 point, get to 17 points. He had 8 points overall, 4 rebounds, 2 turnovers, but he's still finding ways other than scoring to contribute with these guys. I guess that for some sort of silver lining here, but I'll talk about the ending of the game. I'll just go through the guys here real quick, but Kamari McGee, probably one of the more obviously as a team we weren't as aggressive in this game, but I would point out to Cam, I mean, some of the questionable decisions he did have towards the end of the game, I'm going to call that out as well. I would give him some credit for at least trying to make some stuff happen. So 18 minutes, he did have 7 points, 3 steals, and 2 rebounds, and one of them from the three-point line. He's still that consistent stat stuffer at the end of the day that that this team needs. And if we're going to go anywhere, he's going to be a definite big part of that. And then Jack Janicki also got 14 minutes in this game. Did have 3 rebounds, also had 1 turnover. Tyler pointed out in the group chat, I believe it was in the second half when he was in there, that he definitely had kind of the deer in the headlights kind of look at one point and then just wanted to try and get him out. But I think it's not just him. It was kind of a collective as a team. You guys brought up the term egregious in terms of the turnovers that we made. Yep. I've said it to multiple people. It literally looked like some of the turnovers that we committed. Like if you would have told me these guys are trying to throw the game, I actually would have believed it. They were that egregious. It got that bad. I never seen anything like that in terms of closing a game. So if you're going to combine the 17 turn, I always said the magic number this year was 10. When you're above that 10 number, then what's, you know, you're treading on a thin line of ice for the most part. Yeah. Obviously 17 doesn't cut it. 11 in the second half is very inexcusable. Yeah. You can't score 9 points in the final 10 minutes, including overtime, plus 6 turnovers in that span. You can't have the turnovers and the points, you know, basically almost match up with each other. That's not going to get you a win at all. And when you shoot 7 of 28 from 3, and when we score primarily, most of our points do come from the three-point line. So if you're not going to have the best at shooting night, it's very, very important that at bare minimum, you got to take care of the ball at the end of the day. If you're shooting, if you're not going to be not the best shooting night, which, hey, it happens, right? Yep. It definitely happens. You got to take care of the ball. I go back to the whole deer in the headlights type deal. And that wasn't just Janicki. I feel like that was, I mean, I hate to say it, you know, and Stephen Crawley got 6 turnovers, John Blackwell 5 turnovers, Klesman had 2. I mean, everyone basically was on the hook, except Nolan Winter, who I wanted to call out. I thought this was one of his more efficient games. Obviously hit that big shot in OT to really get us going. He was +9 for you know, the Badgers, and I think that was the best stat line out of everybody else, so kudos to him. Yeah, lacked aggressiveness. You guys talked about that as well. I wanted to call that out. You can't go 6 free throws a whole game, especially when you got a guy like Tanjay as aggressive as he is getting to the free throw line. Yep. Just losing that aggressiveness at the end of the game, ultimately, I think that last 7 to 8 minutes with what we're known for, I've said the term where this is not your father's Badger team, where we want to keep the ball, you know, the entire time and then put up some shot at the end of the shot clock. Does that work sometimes? Absolutely it does. Mm-hmm. But we just got away from our identity with this team. I think that's the best way to put it. So
I think Brad nailed the hit the nail on the head when he said the shot selection at the ball stopped moving in the second half. And that's what I was saying. Mm-hmm. With John Tanjay needing to have more touches, especially bring up those last 10 minutes over and over again, Oregon hung around that like 11 to 15 area for basically the entire second half. They got it to single digits with 5 minutes left in the game. That was when they finally got it down to 15 or down to single digits, was after 15 minutes of the Badgers leading by double digits in the second half. So that shot selection is absolutely a part of it. You look at points in the paint. That's a big part of this, too. You mentioned the 7 for 28 on threes, but look at points in the paint. The Badgers had 26 points in the paint in the first half. Oregon had 26 points total in the first half. Points in the paint in the second half for the Badgers, 14.
Yeah.
So it's almost cut in half of what they had in the first half. That, to me, also is a sign that they stopped playing aggressively. You bring up the turnovers. You bring up the lack of points. To me, that all said that the Badgers were up by 10, 15 points for most of the second half, and they were like, all right, we can coast the last 5 minutes. That's what it felt like to me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you can blame the coach because, you know, the casuals come out of the woodwork when the Badgers lose a game. But this is on everybody to stay locked in for all 40 minutes of the game. It's not just on the coach to tell the guys to stay locked in. These are D1 college basketball players. They should know to be locked in.
Yeah.
And to not think that, you know, they're not going to be came back on if they stop trying hard.
Especially if it's a tournament team. Oregon's a tournament team. You cannot afford to let off the gas by any means. You can't let off the gas with anybody, but Oregon's a veteran, about tournament team for sure. They're going to be that 6 to 7 seed that's going to have the capability to take out a 2-3 seed in the second round without a doubt, for sure.
Yeah, Brad, I said something kind of similar with Blackwell. Brad said Blackwell didn't let the game come to him. Yeah, he let Oregon dictate what he was going to do. And I mentioned him being 0 for 6 from the three-point line where Oregon was wanting him to play from, and Tanjay not having a good three-point day. Those two combined were 2 for 16 from the three-point line. The rest of the team was 5 for 12. That's pretty solid. I'll take 5 for 12 all day from the rest of the team. But you look at this game, obviously went into overtime. If Blackwell or Tanjay have a better day from the three-point line, could have a different result if the Badgers just keep the pedal down in the second half. Especially over those last 10 minutes, I think they're in a better spot to win. But overall, welcome back, Justin. With people, Badgers going a 5-game winning streak, Guard gets named as a coach of the year finalist to watch or whatever, the watch list.
Yeah.
And then this game happens, and we're just right back to fire Guard. And it's like this – the blame Guard, fire Guard, as if this one game erases the entirety of what this season has brought. That this loss carries with it some overwhelming weight that the rest of them don't have. Or that, you know, 17 wins don't add up to the same as 5 losses or 6 losses. Like, There has to be some critical thinking here to be like, okay, yes, this loss itself is frustrating, but it does not mean that the Badgers are going to be one and done in the tournament.
A lot of teams are going to be one and done in the tournament. There's 64 teams.
Half will be done.
Half of them are going to be,
One and done.
Yeah. So we just need to get a grip a little bit and move on. So anything else you guys want to say on the Oregon game before we do that?
Just got a few questions for you guys. So when they, after the Blackwell turnover and they hit the crazy three-pointer, which, like, it is what it is. A lot of people are shot makers now. Everybody can shoot from deep, it seems like. Yeah. Would you guys have fouled, or would you let them get that shot off?
I would have, but I did not look, and this is on me. I did not look if the Badgers had any timeouts. But if you are going to be a player like John Blackwell who wants to be at the next level, like, I'll trust him to make that decision.
Yeah, that's fair.
Like, if he misses the shot, nobody's going to be like, oh, should have followed.
Yeah.
You'd have been like, oh, yeah, we'll live with that. Yeah. So, like, there's always two sides of the coin. Personally, I think I would have. Like, we've seen it work. We've seen the Badgers do it and following up 3 to force them to try to get 2 points. But to play the devil's advocate on that same point, let's say you foul, he makes the first one, he has to miss the second one. What was Oregon's best player position-wise?
True.
So there's a decent shot.
That's now,
a rebound and a tip-in.
Jake, I wish I had this in front of me. Do you know how much time for me in that situation specifically, it's a time. It would everything would have to be timing. Do you know how much time was on the clock in that and that specific moment?
I could find
out. I'm just curious. I wish
I'm gonna pull it up.
I apologize. I should know this. Was it like 15 seconds? I want to say 17 maybe. Why do I think 17 seconds?
Bottom here, when he made it, there was 12 seconds left.
Okay.
There was 14 when he made it.
You're alive. I'm looking at it right now.
Yeah. So in that situation, wow. I would not personally, I would not have followed
14
right away. If you can help it, I would have like let some clock run out. So the fact that he literally shot that right away, you know, that was beyond NBA range.
Dog,
is what it is.
Yeah.
Personally, that was like beyond the Aaron Harrison shot that lucky fucker made against us in the Final Four. Like that was beyond behind that.
I had forgotten about it. So thanks for
that. Yeah, that's all right. But I would have let some time go off the clock before, because I do like the foul situation. I would not have fouled with that much time left on
the clock. Yeah, but the time is a good point.
See, Mike, the thing that you brought up that I was arguing with somebody about, I said, dude, did you see where he shot that from?
Yeah.
Do you see where he shot that from? The percentage of him making that with that amount of time, with the score where it was, from how deep he was, that's advantageous to the Badgers. He made a shot, bro.
That could have
been I can promise you.
Oh, my God, Valentine situation.
I'm about 98% sure the Oregon head coach did not have him set up for taking that kind of a shot.
No, that was
very deep. So kudos, you made one. But personally, no, in that situation, I would have seen if I could get some time off the clock before fouling. I do like the fouling part, in that situation for sure, but not yet. That's
the only thing that I would have changed differently. This is me personally. Is I would have just played like a no threes defense. You let the big man alone down low. If he wants to get the damn ball down low and take a dunk after they make two passes and 6 seconds comes off the clock, whatever. That's fine. Because you are the number one shooting free throw team in the nation. That, you have to force the issue into that, right?
Yeah. You're right. Yeah.
People complaining that they should have fouled is ridiculous to me. That's ridiculous. Like
it's a hindsight thing. Because
shot from 32 feet.
Yeah. 26.
What do you want him to do? He made a shot. Yeah. It's fine. Move on.
Brad said maybe a zone press to take some time off. And
I like
and
that.
Like, that's the thing you can do is you can play the zone, but just play it on the perimeter. And like you said, Jake, like let a guy slip. Please. And the same with the following thing. You can play the follow game. I trust this Badgers team way more than I trust any of the previous teams.
Yeah. Because last 10 at end of the game.
20% better free throw shooting team than they've been over the last 5 years.
Yeah, that's insane. 20% is massive.
So that's the other part of it too. You can play the free throw game even with, you know, 12 to 14 seconds left.
Yep.
Just it's even if let's say he makes both, you're up by one with like 10 seconds left. You know, they're gonna foul. You have to make yours, and you foul, and ideally the time runs out.
Mm-hmm.
So you can just play the foul game for that time. This is all stuff that you don't know how it's gonna work out. Until you play the game. Yeah. That's why they play the games.
Yeah.
Again, if he misses that three, we're not having this conversation at all.
No. I mean, we're going to be like, whew, man, we were one crazy shot away from blowing a 17-point lead.
Yeah.
He made the shot. They go on to win. It is what it is, dude.
Yeah. So there's – I'll just say it this way. There's no absolute correct answer in these situations.
No.
You have to just pick it, let it happen. The other team gets a say, and then you have to play the game out.
Yeah.
And yeah, Brad, they had their press, and I like that the Badgers were able to try to get into transition a little bit more and that they're comfortable getting into transition to avoid allowing some of those presses to get set up.
Yeah.
But yeah, the 11 turnovers in the second half is a lot.
Dude, if the Badgers had like an athletic big man that could like throw down consistently in the fast break, they would be a disgusting team.
Yeah.
Like, I mean like a, you know, like a freaking Holmes from Dayton last year. If they had one of those guys, dude, this Badgers team would be disgusting.
It'd be interesting to see how Amos comes onto the team next year.
He's definitely got the most athletic upside.
Yeah. And he can shoot, which is cool.
Yeah. Oh, all
right.
We'll talk about that. Oh, good time.
Let's work on the upswing. And since we're just talking about Xavier Amos, because that's going to be a fun guy to talk about for the Washington game, Jake, start talking about the bigs.
Yeah, I have to start with this. Since we're going to talk about Xavier Amos, he had 12 points. He would have been the leading scorer on Washington last night.
Did not catch that.
The leading scorer for Washington had 11.
That was uncalled for.
Yeah. I'll allow it.
Yeah. Yeah, I was like, I was writing down all the numbers and after I was rewatching, and I was like, he would have been the leading scorer on their team, bro. That's insane. He had a really good game, though. 4 of 5, 3 of 4 from three. 12 points, obviously, like I said. 2 points, 2 rebounds. Crowell also had 12 points, also would have been the leading scorer. He had 3 rebounds, 4 assists. He was 5 of 8. Nolan Winter, 6 points, 7 rebounds. And Gilmore had 2 points, 0 rebounds, 2 assists. Now, here's what I'm going to say about the bigs. Oh, first of all, I have to say this. This was, if you're talking about blowing a 17-point lead versus Oregon, and then you need a get-right game, man, yes. What a time for Washington to come into Madison, dude. Holy shit. Timing is everything in life, and this was great timing for the Badgers. Mm-hmm. They needed somebody to beat the hell out of. So thank you, Washington, for submitting your name for that. Badgers defense last night, the bigs were phenomenal.
Yes. Literally, I had all of them. All
I
of
have
them.
Zero complaints on defense, dude. They were awesome. After all the questions I had versus Oregon, dude. Sorry.
I wrote right here, Crowell being assertive on both ends, and I underlined it like 4 times.
Yes.
He was assertive on offense and defense.
The rotations, crisp, on time. The rebounding, with a purpose. They actually looked like college D1 basketball players for 40 straight minutes, and I loved every second of it. Everyone looked locked in. After a game where you guys were talking about it, everybody was thinking it in the world, where it looked like the Badgers were trying to coast the last couple of minutes versus Oregon and see if they could just get out of Dodge with a you know, close win, what it was coming down to. They looked locked in last night the entire game.
They stayed locked in was the biggest thing, even in the second half without a certain player that I'll let Mike talk about. But, they stayed locked in.
We'll talk about that, too. That's going to be interesting. But the biggest thing for me I lost my train of thought. they looked locked in. Go ahead. I lost my train of thought.
So this game actually got off to like a weirdly slow start. There was like 3 minutes either team scored. And then John Tanjay broke the 0-0 tie with a late shot clock step back as the shot clock expired. Mm-hmm. And that was the only three he made. He was 1 for 6 from the three-point line. So not his best three-point shooting night, but the team picked him up. He had 13 points. But I talked about John Blackwell in the Oregon game, letting Oregon dictate how he played. Then we get to Washington, and John Blackwell dictated how John Blackwell played this game.
Yes.
And yes, to me, if you are going to blame Blackwell for being timid on offense against Oregon on Greg Gard, you have to give credit to Greg Gard, who I guarantee you went to John Blackwell in between these two games and said, hey, you are a guy who can and has scored 30 points this season. Play like that guy.
Yep.
And he did. And on top of that, another thing I've brought up this season is when John Blackwell has good three-point shooting nights, the Badgers are a very, very dangerous team. So both of those things were true. And John Blackwell also hit a late shot clock three in the first half. Hit 2 more off of some really nice passes by Carter Gilmore versus Washington's zone defense, and hit a really tough mid-range shot to beat the first half buzzer. So a really great bounce back game for John Blackwell, especially from the 3-point line. He was 9 of 16 from the field, 4 of 7 from the 3-point line, had 24 points and a season high 10 rebounds.
Yeah.
So John Blackwell all over the place. John Tanjay just had 13 points. But there was a lot of other scoring going on, so John Tanja didn't really have to carry the load that much. So, Mike, how'd you feel about the guards?
We had other guards step up in this game. I'll start with Max Klesman real quick. I'll get this out of the way. He played for 5 minutes. Staff felt like he shouldn't return to the game. He's dealing with a lower leg injury. Sounded like it's not too serious, but the way everything that I've been reading, it sounds like his ankle might have been a little re-aggravated. He had that ankle injury against Rutgers, I want to say, earlier this year that caused some problems. So it sounds like that might be the case. And, the coaching staff felt like he shouldn't go back in because I think it's – might have, and maybe it has something to do with the team that we're playing. There's not a top-tier team in the Big Ten. Maybe it's that. Maybe he's just seriously hurt, which is, it is what it is. Take care. We can get, I mean, we've been able to, get get games done with other guys out of the lineup too. So, yeah. And it, you know, it forced for guys like Kamari McGee and Jack Janicki to step up, and they sure as hell did. Yeah. So starting with Kamari McGee, he got 23 minutes, 8 points, four of eight shooting, 3 rebounds, 2 assists, another stat stuffer of a night. Tyler, you talked about the 10 number with Kamari McGee. Well, there you go. 8, 3, and 2. So, yeah, call that out right away.
Smart guy sometimes.
I want to start with Kamari. He made much better decisions with his aggressiveness getting to the hoop. You know, going back to that Oregon game, one of the things I wanted to bring up was just one of the examples. He was making questionable decisions in overtime when he was trying to put a shot up in the paint over Biddle. Yeah. I think it was just kind of where, you know, going back to the deer in the headlights feel. But he definitely rebounded in this game much better. So, yeah, very, very much better decisions all around with his aggressiveness getting to the hoop. No complaints there. And then Jack Janicki, we got to get my man Ascali, I think, after this season if he doesn't have one already. You know, another big game from him for his standards anyway with 19 minutes. 8 points, 4 rebounds, 2 assists, and 2 steals. That sounds like a great day, especially for a bench player. Yeah, I think I also wanted to call out, there was a beautiful give-and-go play with Kamari and Janicki in that second half. It was perfect. Did a nice little backdoor cut on, I think it was Washington's big man that ended up being matched up on him, on Janicki on the wing. Cam saw that, made a beautiful give-and-go look for a bucket. The one biggest stat that I want to call in this game was the bench overall. I mean, Jake brought up Amos, Gilmore. The bench went for 29 points and 7 assists in this game. So I brought it up before on previous shows where we have legitimately 9 guys that defenses have to prepare for that can shoot the three would be a perfect example, right? So I think this is another one of those examples for sure. You know, this game, it was, you know, Amos hitting threes. I mean, obviously, no Janicki can do it. We know Cam can do it. Even Gilly James can do it from time to time too. So this is just a perfect example of how dangerous this lineup can be when we're hitting on all cylinders, and when one of our guys is out of the lineup, we are more than capable of scoring points. 88 is definitely decent. So, and the other stat I wanted to call out, I know we kind of brought this up even before the show. I hope fans realize this, but the Badgers this time last year were 1-5 or 1-6 in February. Fast forward, we are now 6-1 in the month of February. So going to back to Tyler's point on the whole, you know, Oregon game, yes, we want to fire guard now. If you just take even a 360 look on where we are right now and what position we're in, so much more is ahead of us right now. We have so much to play for yet. If you want to even, you know, a skeptical fan, fine, take out the Big Ten conference title. We have so much to play for in terms of Big Ten tournament seeding. Seeding to play in Milwaukee yet, that is very much in play right now. We could definitely get as high as a 2 seed for sure. We're right on the 9-10 line, I want to say, according to Joe Lenardi. So for any of you casual fans that want to write this season off, be my guest. Don't come back to this show, you know, with that attitude, because we have so much more to play for yet. You know, sky's the limit as far as I'm concerned. So we got 4 days off to prepare for Michigan State. We got time to rest. And we have Michigan State's number, honestly. I believe we won the last 3 matchups against them. That environment's going to be insane. We also have a senior-led-ish team, a bunch of vets. It's going to be one hell of an atmosphere, and I'm looking forward to it.
I would love John Tanjay to have like a Johnny Davis type performance.
There you go.
Honestly, I'm kind of hoping for like a classic, like Max Klezman. He goes like insane, like 7 for 7 from 3 in the second half or something like that. Like, we need one of those yet. We haven't had one.
Not since Marquette.
He's saving it, dude, but it's happening. It's going to happen. I'm telling you. Also, I just want to hit on one point that Mike said. The most important thing that we're playing for right now is to be able to play in Milwaukee. The advantage for that for the Badgers is insane. That would pretty much be 2 home games to try to get to the Sweet 16, which everybody apparently
that's all the up only in thing that matters.
We got to make the 16. And if we get the Midwest region, the Sweet 16, that's an Indy.
Yeah, it's an Indy.
Think about that.
So we have so much to play for yet in terms of that. And At the same time, we got a handful of teams that are fighting for that too, Michigan State being one of them. So we definitely have a lot to play for yet, even with only three games left, plus a Big Ten tournament.
Yep. Yeah, definitely looking forward to watching some more Badgers basketball. So we have to wait until Sunday for the next one. So it's going to be that big game against Michigan State, and then they finish at Minnesota and home against Penn State. So anything else you guys want to say on the Badgers before we switch to the Bucks?
I think Steve. My man Steve. Yeah, he's got the right idea. I like it.
Nah, I think we're going to have another classic, you know, Izzo, Greg Gard matchup, man. I mean, yeah. Izzo respects the hell out of Greg and our program and vice versa too. Yep. So I'm looking forward to it. For sure.
Tom Izzo is great.
Yeah.
He's one of the few like old dogs that you're just like, I will never hate you, even though I do not like your team.
Yeah.
I will never.
Yeah, your team is a rival to us, but I respect your head coach a lot.
Yeah, he's a monster. Yep. He has a great mindset too. But yeah, I'm looking forward to Sunday, man.
Yeah. All right. Well, hopefully we're talking about a win next Wednesday. Mike, we will have you back then.
Sounds good, fellas. Peace out. Go Wisconsin. Later,
have a good week.
Yeah, you too.
Go Maryland tonight too.
Yes.
All righty. So you and I now, we have four Milwaukee Bucks games to discuss. And it is three dubs and a loss, and they go in that order. Yeah. And it starts with the Clippers. So let's start Bucks Clippers, and tell me what you took away from this game.
Man, there's a lot
of fact that we come out of a fucking All-Star break with a back-to-back right away, and that's some garbage.
Yeah, did you see? Was that last night that they shared that stat, or was that versus the Heat where they were talking about all the back to backs that we have and all the games?
The Bucks have had like 18 back to backs this season already.
Yeah, that's insane.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah, wild. So Giannis obviously still on a minutes restriction. He still has 23, 8, and 4 in 24 minutes, which is just the stupidest thing ever. But yeah. He's just good at basketball.
He had 10 points in the fourth quarter alone.
Yeah, dude, he was 10 of 14. He was cooking in the first half, too. Post fades, like post midi fades, dude. I was like, golly, man, this guy's impossible to guard now. Torian Prince, four threes. He had 14 points. Kuzma hit three threes. We were talking last week about him just being a little bit more efficient from the three-point line. Yeah. He goes out the next day after our show and just that's 3 for 7. And I'm like, that's what I'm talking about, baby.
If he's 3 for 7 every game, I'm on board.
Yep. Also, maybe if he hits like 75% of his free throws. That's the only thing I can complain about otherwise. Yeah. But his defense, amazing. He's been tremendous defensively.
Drew another charge this game. He's played like 6 games with the Bucks, and he's drawn 4 offensive fouls.
Yeah, insanity. Brook Lopez, 22 points, 7 rebounds. He was 8 of 14, 4 of 7 from 3. Also, don't take it lightly. Zubac is a freaking load to deal with, man. He's gigantic.
Like we talked at length when we did our Bucks myth busting last week.
Yeah.
Brook Lopez being number one in contested shots.
Yeah.
Number two is always Zubac.
Yeah. Zubac he's a load to handle. So for Lopez to, you know, exert that kind of energy, I was trying to search for the word exert for so long in my head, to exert that kind of energy on defense and be able to deal with Zubac. I mean, Zubac on the other end too has to deal with Brook, but Brook to be able to hit four threes is impressive.
Zubac is like Brook without a three-pointer.
He is. Damian Lillard had 15 points, 7 rebounds, 7 assists. He wasn't as efficient from the field as you
also
probably wanted to
be. Restriction. That's worth noting.
But, yeah, true. But he scored 12 of his 15 points with 6:48 left in the game. So Giannis started the fourth quarter, got things going. Damian Lillard closed the game, which is what we brought him here for, right? Kevin Porter Jr., we got to talk about my man here. Dunking on people. Throwing lobs. Lob was against a different team, but he's still throwing lobs, trying to get that going with Sims. And the double pump fake, dude. What?
Yeah.
What? He did the first one. I was like, ooh, good pump fake. He did the second one. I said, oh, hell no. And then he made the layup. I'm like, holy shit, he did not, dude.
Just spamming Y.
The funniest thing is that the second pump fake was on Ben Simmons. That was funny to me. Because I saw Bucks fans complaining that the Bucks didn't get Ben Simmons. So the main thing to take away here, Sims didn't score, obviously, but the Bucks had 6 players in double digits. They had one player, Gary Trent Jr., who had 7, so he was literally one shot away from double digits, and A.J. Green had 9, so he was 1 point away. They almost had 8 players in double digits. The Clippers had three players with at least 20-plus points. So the even scoring for the Bucks versus the top-heavy scoring for the Clippers, it shows that, you know, the strength of a team together, and this is obviously with Giannis and Dame on minutes restrictions, not going to be like that all the time. It'd be nice if the bench was like this all the time. They've been pretty good since the trade deadline.
Yeah.
But, you know, having this balanced scoring is really nice, man. I've been enjoying it. The ball is moving a little bit better, and the defense has been awesome. When we get to the game last night, I do have some fourth quarter stats, some offensive, defensive rating stuff for you guys. Yeah. So,
and the other word that I'll throw in there is depth.
Yeah. Oh, one last thing before I let you go. I have to get this out. People still talk shit about Brook Lopez. Brook Lopez had a huge block.
Yep. Blocked Kawhi Leonard.
And an and-one with 3 minutes and 2 seconds left in this game to give the Bucks the lead, and they never gave it back after that. So keep talking about Brook Lopez, please, and then don't watch the game where he has a huge momentum block and then goes down and gets an and-one in the post, by the way, which everybody says he doesn't go down into. So the game was tied at 104 at the time, so good job by Brook Lopez being clutch-time performer.
Yeah, Steve brought up the Celtics, that Tatum doesn't beat us, Pritchard and Horford beat us. Balance matters. That depth is important. We'll definitely be talking more about Kevin Porter Jr. But
yeah.
So I just want to start with the fourth quarter because you brought it up and you're talking about it already.
Yeah, go ahead.
There was a little under 6 minutes left. Brook Lopez blocks Kawhi, comes down, and splashes a three-pointer. Yeah. There are still Bucks fans who do not understand Brook Lopez's role on this team.
Yep.
We're going to talk about last night when we get there, but fuck's sake, he's been here for 5 years. How do you still not understand what his role is?
Reading is hard.
5 years.
That's a long time.
Like, I get that you just want to be angry and you want to talk your shit, but just please learn basketball.
Mm-hmm.
The Bucks as a team, 17 of 43 from the three-point line, 39.5%. I will take that all day. The Bucks are one of the best three-point shooting teams in the league. They kind of live and die by it. Yeah. They live by it more than they die by it. But when they die by it, that's when their losses come.
Yeah.
Spoiler alert. You mentioned Kuzma being 3 for 7. Brooke and Torian Prince were both 4 for 7. So, really good job on the three-point shooting there. 17 turnovers is high. 8 of them came in the third quarter. The Clippers turned into 13 points off turnovers in just the third quarter.
Yeah.
They had 11 points off turnovers in the other three quarters combined. That's what dug the Bucks a hole. They were down by 13 points with 10:42 to go in the game. With Dame and Giannis on minutes restrictions, neither of them really looked like themselves. That's going to continue. With the game after this, obviously Dame didn't play, but neither of them really looked like themselves. You brought up Kyle Kuzma's defense. Great call.
Dude.
Kyle Kuzma versus Kawhi Leonard. Kawhi was 0 for 4 from the field. Kyle Kuzma versus Bogdan Bogdanovic. He was 0 for 3 from the field. The Clippers total against Kyle Kuzma were 4 for 16.
Oh, yeah.
25% from the field against Kyle Kuzma.
Yeah.
And Kevin Porter Jr., his defense on Kawhi. Kawhi was 0 for 3. James Harden, he was 1 for 3 against Kevin Porter Jr. and 1 for 3 against Kyle Kuzma. Mm-hmm. The Lakers as a team were 4 for 11 against Kevin Porter Jr. That's 36% from the field.
Mm-hmm.
And you brought up that they had three guys who were all over 20 points. The Clippers got very top heavy. They got very isolation heavy late in this game. And Torian Prince did two very great things late in this game. One of them, a little bit of credit goes to Doc Rivers for challenging the call to get a defensive foul on Torian Prince overturned into an offensive foul for him reaching up and hooking Torian.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
That's a great challenge by Doc. And right after that, Torian Prince hit a huge three that pushed the Bucks lead to 5 points. Brook Lopez blocked another shot on Kawhi Leonard, a layup attempt. And the next Clippers possession, James Harden jacked up an air ball, which felt really good deep in the bottom of my heart. Felt real good as a lifelong Dwayne Wade fan. And then Damian Lillard iced the game with free throws.
I want to say a good call on that. I almost forgot about that. Damian Lillard was calling the offensive foul on James Harden live as it was happening.
Yeah.
If you watch the replay, he's like,
because he pulls that shit all the time.
I know. And then I like that Prince was just like standing there like penguin style. Yeah. Was like, are you gonna call this or not?
Yeah. Can I have my arm back?
Yeah. Harden didn't even get the shot off. He walked. He took like 9 steps. Although his step back used to take 9 steps too. And he's just like standing there with the ball. It's like, dude, how are the refs look at that and they call a foul on Prince?
Yeah.
That makes zero sense to me. That's one of those calls where like you go back and you talk about, you know, holding the refs accountable. That could be one where you find the ref because that's an egregious call.
I don't know which ref it was, but if it was the ref from like – if I'm looking at the basket, if it was the one that's over there that had the back view of Taurean Prince, I could see thinking that it was a reach-in foul.
That's fair.
Until you see that Taurean Prince's like arm is tucked to his body, not reaching.
Yeah, he was like trying to like put his hands in his pockets almost.
Yeah.
And
that's what the review was that Taurean Prince had a legal guarding position established, and James Harden took a dribble towards him, scooped his arm up, and then held onto it.
Yeah, that's just ridiculous.
That's a great call, great overturn.
Yeah.
And then he hit the three. What I think is funny is I went to watch this game a second time, and the game that I got was the Clippers broadcast.
Oh no.
They put a stat on in the third quarter that they had 3 games where they trailed by 10-plus points. The Bucks had a 12-point lead in the first half. They had 3 straight games where they trailed by 10-plus, and in all 3, they came back to win. So they put that stat up that they were winning in the third quarter, that they had won their last 3 games after trailing all 3 by 10, and then the Bucks took their double-digit lead and turned it into a win.
That's so funny. I love that so much.
So the last 8 minutes and 14 seconds, the Bucks were down 98-88. They won on a 13-3 run that turned into a 21-6 run that turned into a 28-12 finish over the last 8 minutes and 14 seconds.
There you go.
All right. Great finish for the Bucks against the Clippers. Let's switch over to the Wizards game.
Yeah. So first thing I wrote down was, if you want to see the epitome of a game where the team is just going through the motions, watch the Bucks versus Wizards. I literally felt like they were going through the motions the entire game. There was moments where they kind of turned it up a little bit. Got to give a shout out to Ryan Rollins. He had a really, really good game. 15 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists, 6 of 10 from the field, 2 of 5 from 3. He was tremendous in this one. Kevin Porter Jr. also had a good game. Gary Trent Jr., he scored 9 points, shot 4 of 13 from the field, 0 of 7 from 3, but he scored all 9 of his points off the drive. He was very efficient driving the ball to the basket, 80% shooting there. Giannis, this is the game where it was like, okay, you could tell that his leg was not 100%. You know, coming off the Clippers game, he was pretty good driving the ball. He shot 85% on drives versus the Clippers. Then versus the Wizards, where his leg's not 100%, he shot 30% driving the basketball. And that's where you're like, okay. Now, again, I'm going to sound redundant to you because you talk about it all the time. There's no back-to-backs in the playoffs. So it doesn't worry me one bit. He'll get an extra day, you know, for travel and all that other stuff. So then he's going to get worked on by the best doctors in the business. He's going to get all the best drugs, the legal drugs, not the Bobby Portis kind. Had to give a shot to Bobby Portis. He knows what he did. It's okay. We can joke about it now.
Joke about it in 21 games.
Yeah. Hopefully he'll be nice and rested for the playoffs, I'll tell you that.
Right.
He might be a little out of shape, but I'm assuming that he's gonna be doing some
running. I'm assuming he's probably working out plenty.
Yeah. But you know, Brooke Lopez had a good game. Kuzma had a really, really good game. This was just a game for, you know, the young guys kind of show off a little bit. We got to see a little bit more of Sims. He took 0 shots, but he had 5 rebounds and an assist. Now, the first couple of games of his playing time, I should say, you know, since Bobby Portis has been suspended, I feel like me and you were on the same wavelength. And I feel like that a lot of times when we talk about basketball. But I feel like we were kind of not hating on him, but we were kind of looking at him this critically the same way that people look at Brooke Lopez. And unfairly in some ways, not from us on Sims, but to Brooke Lopez. And it's like, I don't understand why people just want guys to play just because they can jump and they're athletic. That doesn't make you good at basketball.
I think I had that feeling more in the Miami game So I'm going to hold off on that conversation until we get to the Miami game.
Okay. I mean, I felt that way the whole time when I was watching. I was like,
yeah,
everybody's like, talking about Brook Lopez's rebounding, and Sims has 7 rebounds in 2 games, and he's playing 15 to 20 minutes. You want to talk about rebounding? And this guy's a 45-inch vertical.
Yeah.
Not like Brook Lopez, who has a 15-inch vertical.
Yeah, he's like 25 years old.
Yeah. So that was just my piece on that. We're going to talk about the Miami game. We got a lot of good stuff to talk about that. But, you know, the Wizards game, seeing Chris Middleton in a Wizards jersey was pretty freaking weird. I don't know if you saw last night. Did you see Middleton get into it with a Nets player last night?
I did not see that.
Yeah, there was he was on the floor. He was kind of on the, you know, the timeline. And then he, like, walks over to the corner three, like the left corner three, and he just got right into the face of somebody on the Nets, and they were freaking jawing. And, like, we know Middleton as a very, you know, mellow-tempered person.
Yeah.
So for him to get going like that, like, he wasn't, like, going crazy, but he was definitely saying some disrespectful stuff. Like, they were getting into it, man.
Huh. Now, I was talking to a coworker today, and I'm like, it is weird to me that Marcus Smart and Chris Middleton are on the same basketball team.
Yeah, that's pretty weird. We wanted it to be in Milwaukee.
Right?
Yeah. It just happened in Washington, which nobody saw.
Both of you guys want to come over in the summer, like, you know.
Yeah.
Do you have anything else you wanted to say on the Wizards game?
No, it was just they won, so I was happy.
Yeah. 3-point shooting. So I just said in the last game that when they have bad games, it usually correlates to losses. This is one of those exceptions to the rule where they had a bad 3-point shooting night. Mm-hmm. 9 of 32, 28%. That's rough. They had a pretty rough first half. This is the second night of the back-to-back. So that's where we're talking about the legs not being there. Gary Trent Jr. was 0 for 7.
Yeah.
But the other side of that coin is he was 4 for 6 on twos. So that's that. 16 turnovers, 7 came on Giannis, 2 of them via offensive fouls. Offensive fouls count as turnovers, so he had 5 mm-hmm. turnovers and 2 offensive fouls. That's, again, where he just did not look 100%. He had 18 points, 6 rebounds, and 3 assists. He still scored somewhat efficiently, but just not 100%. They did a good job on those 16 turnovers, limiting Washington to only 10 points off turnovers. So great job there. The Bucks 3-game winning streak, they held opponents to 110, 101, and 101 to this point. It's 104 average. It's a really great job defensively. One thing we talked about, Kevin Porter Jr., Damian Lillard sat this game out. Second of a back-to-back, he was limited already the night before, and they put Ryan Rollins into the starting lineup. Doc Rivers was asked about that, and they said because they wanted to keep Kevin Porter Jr. in his same role. This is a little bit more confirmation of something I brought up last week, which is that I believe Kevin Porter Jr. has overtaken Ryan Rollins as the backup point guard.
Mm-hmm.
I think the minutes, as far as these next two games go as well, are continuing to show that. And I believe the Bucks will now have like 3 or 4 more games to decide if they're going to put Ryan Rollins on the roster or if they're going to pick up a bought out player or a G League player for their open roster spot. That said, Kevin Porter Jr., 12 points, 5 of 10 from the field, 3 rebounds, 3 assists, 3 steals, only 1 turnover. So great job by Kevin Porter Jr. The Bucks just themselves in the second and third quarter, they went from down 12 going into the second to up 9 going into the fourth, a 21-point swing, while shooting only 33% from the 3-point line.
Damn.
The second and third quarters, they were 25 of 41 overall. That's 60%. They were 6 of 18 on threes in that time. That's 33.3%. They were 19 for 23 on twos.
That's insane.
The Bucks were abusing the Wizards in the paint.
Yeah,
they were. In the second and third quarters.
Wow.
So, love to see that. We can go to the Heat game now because this game is interesting. Another double-digit comeback for the Bucks, but another tale of two halves.
Yeah, go ahead. Why don't you give yours, and I'll give mine after.
So, looking at first half points in the paint, Miami had 38. Milwaukee had 16. Second half, Miami had 22. Milwaukee had 32.
Yeah, they did.
The Bucks went into halftime, and they came out of halftime with their big boy pants on.
The man played more in the second half.
They doubled their points in the paint from the first half to the second half.
Yeah.
And honestly, I said this to you, the first three quarters of this game were annoying as hell.
Oh, tough to watch.
Officiating was terrible and inconsistent. And the fourth quarter, the Bucks were down eight, and they're just like, you know what? Kevin Porter Jr., you're going to go set the tone for us.
Yeah.
And he did exactly that. To get two super tough restricted area buckets, cut the lead to two, then hit a mid-range to tie it, then had an oops to Sim for the lead. Like, ooh, that stretch, like, completely took the air out of the lungs of the Heat. Absolutely set the tone for the rest of the fourth quarter. A.J. Green hit a three that capped a 12-0 run for the Bucks, and in the last 5 minutes, an adjustment that I don't think went noticed, but Doc Rivers put Kyle Kuzma on Tyler Hero.
Yep, I noticed that. I was waiting for you to get to this game to talk about it.
And Kyle Kuzma did allow Tyler Hero to go 2 for 3, but he only took three shots
in that period. He also made him turn the ball over, and he was pushing him out of his comfort zone too.
Yeah. So, yes, he still shot 2 of 3, but it was not as easy for him to get shots against Kyle Kuzma as it was against guys like A.J. Green and Dame.
I am going to say, one of the shots he made was fucking tough, ridiculous. Dude.
Yeah.
Freaking turnaround mid-range, dude. That was tough. Like, that's one of those shots you just go like, good shot, buddy.
Yep. But wouldn't leave you with thinking that Kyle Kuzma did not have a good game defensively. Kyle Kuzma versus Andrew Wiggins. Andrew Wiggins was 1 for 6 from the field and 0 for 4 from the three-point line.
Shit.
Khalil Ware, Bam Adebayo, and Terry Rozier against Kyle Kuzma were all 0 for 1. I mentioned that Tyler Hero was 2 for 3 in a minute and 34 seconds. Miami total against Kyle Kuzma was 3 for 12 from the field.
Wow.
Kyle Kuzma's putting some clamps down.
If you don't think the Bucks defense is better right now than it was, you know, before the trade deadline, you're blind because the defense is elite now.
Yeah, I'm going to write that down to bring that up and do the exact numbers on it. But the Bucks are putting clamps on.
They are. you ready? My turn?
I got a couple more things yet.
Go ahead.
Second half
of
the first three games out of the All-Star break. So the Clippers, the Wizards, and the Heat. The second half, they outscored those three teams 178 to 153.
Nice.
The Bucks were 14 of 39 from the three-point line. That's 35.9%. That's the exact league average.
Yeah.
You'll hear during games that the Bucks are number 2 in three-point percentage. On bad three-point nights, they'll struggle. Mm-hmm. It's just that's their identity is to be a good three-point shooting team around Giannis. That's just what their identity is.
Mm-hmm.
Keep that in mind when we get to the next game.
Mm-hmm.
Turnovers. Only 9. That's brilliant.
Yeah, it is.
Only 11 points off turnovers, off of those 9 turnovers. Only 3 turnovers in the second half. And only 1 in the fourth quarter.
Mm.
That's how you erase double-digit leads.
Oh, yeah.
All right. You give your thoughts on this game, and then let's talk about Jericho Sims as a whole.
Okay, so we talked about Giannis and Dame not looking like themselves the previous two games. Obviously, Dame missed that Wizards game. He came back versus the Heat. He had 28 points, 3 rebounds, 8 assists, and I thought he looked really good. He looked quick. He did slow down a little bit, but he looked pretty quick on the offensive end and was making really good decisions passing the ball. Brooke Lopez had 17 points, a back-to-back good scoring outputs for him, so the haters were silent for back-to-back games. Love that for me. Kyle Kuzma, God, he is like – this close, he's going to have a 30-point game for the Bucks in the next couple of weeks.
Before the season's over.
He's this close. You know, he's getting some really open looks. Obviously, you know, we go to last night's game and he missed a couple and everybody's bitching, saying that he sucks. We'll get to that in a sec. Gary Trent Jr., 5 for 9 from the field, 3 for 5 from three. He was awesome. Gary Trent Jr. has been that guy this year that if this guy's not hitting or this guy's not hitting, you know, player A, player B's not hitting, Gary Trent Jr. will come in and be like, okay, I got my shooter cap on. And he comes in and starts hitting some big boy shots. And all of a sudden it's like, you see the demeanor of the team. Like, all right, let's go. We got the cap off the rim now. Kevin Porter Jr., man, I don't know if I could say anything else about him that hasn't already been said. This man made a layup and kissed the ball.
No, nope, that was the next game.
Was that against the Rockets?
That was against the Rockets. That was last
night. Oh, shit. Dude, I'm sorry. It's burned.
That was head. After a dunk.
You're right. It's burned into my head, and I was like, I cannot believe he just kissed the ball. Okay, you're right. Sorry, I'm getting ahead of myself. I was so excited to talk about that.
He did have two layups in this game, though, and then a mid-range.
Yeah. His mid-range, by the way, so now that I'm talking about KPJ, he's been tremendous driving the ball, knocking down mid-range jumpers, and getting Sims involved. Finally, he throws a lob to Sims and it connects. And I'm like, yes!
Yeah.
Finally, this is what we brought you in here for.
Those two are developing a little bit of chemistry. I like it.
They are. The two-man game between KPJ and Sims has some potential.
Yeah.
With Gary Trent spreading the floor, guys like AJ Green spreading the floor. The Bucks bench overall has gotten a complete makeover, and it's tremendous. Something I didn't consider that they really did a really good job of remaking at the trade deadline is the Bucks didn't have enough people that dunked.
Yeah,
I saw somebody say that. They're
looking for an athletic lob threat.
I literally saw somebody say that, and I was like, holy shit, dude. Kuzma, he's athletic. He dunks. Yep. Kevin Porter Jr., he dunks. Sims, he dunks. I was like, damn, bro, we just traded for people that dunk, and look at our team. Wild, bro. Give a shout-out here on the efficiency. So on the drive, we scored 31 points. Seven players, all efficient. They were doing work. Awesome job. 27 points on catch and shoot. I wrote down that GTJ has been lit. He's been on fire. He has 9 points on 100% shooting on catch and shoot opportunity. So he was tremendous. Yeah, I agree, Brad. Yeah, his head takes.
Porter's head takes were sick. That's absolutely true. That's a really good point, Brad.
Pull up game, we had 31. This is where we weren't super efficient with Dame and Giannis. They had 16 points on 33% shooting. So there's more room to grow. And they scored 120 points, which is disgusting to think about.
Right.
In the paint. We scored 13. Brooke Lopez, Sims, and Giannis combined together, they shot 100%. So shout out to those guys. They did a tremendous job. And I got to say, we got to the point in this game where the Bucks kind of dug in on defense.
Mm-hmm.
Marcus Johnson tweeted it out that the fourth quarter offensive rating was 145 and the defensive rating was 88. I don't know if I've ever seen those two numbers next to each other. Talking about offensive rating, defensive rating, that's sick. It got to the point where you talked about Kuzma went on to Tyler Hero and kind of forced some things to happen with Tyler Hero because Hero was having his way in the first half.
Yeah,
he got 2 feet in the paint almost every goddamn possession. It was super
like it's obviously a rival, so like it hurts to give credit, but Tyler Hero has made massive strides with his passing.
Bro, he is a very good playmaker now.
Yeah. He's more than just a shooter now.
Yeah. He's turning into a good player. He's all right on defense too.
I don't know if I go that far.
He's all right. I don't know if he's a cone anymore, but he's a little bit better.
He's athletic and he can use his athleticism on defense.
There was a point in this game when the game started getting tight and all of a sudden you see 34 standing on the sideline. And I shit you not, I stood up in my living room and I was like, the man is here. And Giannis fucking took over in the fourth quarter, dude. That was his court. That is his stadium. This is his state. And Jesus Christ, the way he was playing in the fourth quarter, this is his league if he wants it to be.
Scoring, assisting, rebounding, he was literally doing it all.
He did literally everything. He was grabbing rebounds, going down, passing the ball. I was like, holy hell, dude, that guy is really good at basketball. Like, holy shit. I wrote down here, and I was trying to hold in my laughter because Mike kept saying deer in the headlights. I said Giannis was the deer. He was just holding the headlight because, man, the Heat were stunned when that man came back in because he was going crazy, bro. I was like, holy shit, dude. But I had to give Giannis his props, man, because one day we're not going to be able to talk about Giannis, so I want to talk about him as much as I can while he's on my team.
Yeah. All right, so last thing before we move into last night's game, I want to talk about Jericho Sims. So he had the alley-oop that gave the Bucks the lead, and I really like what he can bring. He obviously brings athleticism. I don't know if I'm ready to say that he's a good rebounder yet.
Yeah.
But this isn't a dig at Sims. That's why I'm starting with I like what he can bring. But in his time in Milwaukee so far, He has not done or shown me nearly enough to remotely consider playing him more than Brook Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a single thing that he has done that makes me think that Jericho Sims should be playing over Brook Lopez or playing more minutes than Brook Lopez.
Mm-hmm.
He's athletic, and I will give him credit. He is a good screener. Brook Lopez is also a good screener.
Yeah.
But Brook Lopez is by far the better rim protector and by far the better floor spacer.
Yeah. He's a better fit with Giannis for sure.
And with Damian Lillard, in my opinion.
Yep, that's fair.
So is there anything else you want to say about the Heat game? Because then I'm just going to use Brook Lopez as the transition here.
Nope, go ahead.
So let's talk about Brook Lopez. Now, I started this show off when we switched to the Bucks, explaining that Brook Lopez has had the same role for 5 years, and there are still Bucks fans who do not understand Brook Lopez's role.
I already know where this is going. Keep going.
Now, I'm not going to defend one specific shot because it came after the game. Doc Rivers said that's not the shot that they wanted Brook to shoot because he was about 3 feet behind the three-point line with about 28 seconds left to go.
Yeah.
So if he takes one more step in, let it fly.
Yep.
Fine with that.
Yep.
But Brook Lopez, his game is not to be standing in the paint for his entirety of his minutes. That is not his role. That's not why he's here. That's not why the Bucks want him. He is here to contest shots, but offensively, he is here to screen for Damian Lillard or Jrue Holiday or Chris Middleton in the past or Eric Bledsoe. He is here to screen for our point guards, and he is here to make it so that there are less big men in the paint when Giannis is driving to the basket.
Yep.
That is the, out of all of the things that he does, spacing the floor offensively might be the number one reason over contesting shots.
Yeah.
I would argue.
That's a fair argument.
So when the Bucks lose a game and Brook Lopez does not shoot the three ball well, we get to, he should be in the paint. He's big for nothing. He should be in the paint getting rebounds. 5 years he has been here spacing the floor for Giannis to make things easier for the best player in the NBA.
Mm-hmm.
Who thrives on getting to the rim. Do you want Brook Lopez and whoever's guarding him standing in the way?
Pretty simple question.
So, give me your thoughts on the Rockets game.
Okay. So, first of all, Rockets are a good team. I don't know if anybody noticed, but they have a better record than the Bucks right now. And they're pretty good at home. They have a good head coach. He's hard-nosed. The team follows that. Jalen Green is a budding superstar. Sengun is on the precipice of maybe being called a star, not superstar. He's like a Domantas Sabonis. I don't want people comparing him to Jokic because he's not Jokic. He's more like Sabonis, in my opinion.
Yeah, he's like Sabonis, but not quite as good of a passer yet.
Yeah. I have some thoughts on Sengun, too. Giannis played a good game. He's got up to 32 minutes. So really, if you're going to take a positive away from this game, it's that Giannis played over 30 minutes. So that's a good thing for us going forward. Giannis going back to his regular role. Lillard, in this one, honestly, we just needed Lillard to be a little bit more efficient. That's really what it came down to. He wasn't his normal efficiency self, and that could have been the entire difference in the game. If you look at Torian Prince, Kyle Kuzma, and Brook Lopez together, and you're going to talk about three-point shooting, so I'm not going to take it away from you, but when you look at their efficiency, shooting and scoring the ball, a lot of it comes down to those three kind of opening everything else up for Dame and Giannis. You know, you go back to what game was that we were talking about that? You go back to the Clippers game, and those three together played really, really well. They almost had as many three-pointers as the Clippers. You go into this one, and their efficiency was way down. They shot under 30% from the three-point line, shot under 30% from the field, really, overall. So that hurts things. Now, I saw one other thing that I wanted to talk about before I give you some efficiency numbers here. People were complaining that A.J. Green played 33 minutes. A.J. Green was good last night. Why would you not want him to play 33 minutes?
You want me to give you the stat on why AJ Green played that much?
Yeah, go ahead.
He was 4-for-8 from the three-point line.
Yep.
He had 12 points.
Yep.
Our bench had 21 total.
Yep.
AJ Green had 12 of the 21 points off the bench. That's why he played a lot.
The starters made 8 of the 12 three-pointers. All the other three-pointers, like, were for AJ Green. He was really good last night. Now, people have fallen in love with Kevin Porter Jr. I have too. I like Kevin Porter Jr. I like his toughness. I like his ability to break down a defense. He is the guy that makes the Kyle Kuzma trade work in some senses, because what we lost from Chris Middleton, we've gained with Kevin Porter Jr. You're talking about a guy who can make tough shots and create a shot for himself off the dribble. That's what we lost with Chris Middleton. And Kuzma, that's not really his strength. He's not been tremendous on defense. We're kind of beating a dead horse with that at this point, but he's been tremendous there. Kevin Porter Jr. has been tremendous. You know, he's been pretty good on defense too, honestly, but he's been good creating his own shot. And this was the game where he did kiss the ball, and I was like, oh yeah, I like this guy. Getting into efficiency here. Off the drive, the Bucks only scored 15 points. Dame had 8 points on 28%. I mean, his legs just – they're getting back. They're getting there. They're not fully there. Plus, again, the Rockets are pretty big team, honestly, long when you get down to it. I am going to talk about something else as a question for you when we get to it.
Mm-hmm.
Catch and shoot. 29 points. Prince and Green were tremendous. AJ Green, we talked about, he hit 12 points on 57% on catch and shoots. Torian Prince had 6 on 67%. So they did their job. Dame, 6 points. Brooke, 5 points on catch and shoots. They both shot 33%. So the efficiency there could be a little bit higher. In the pull-up game, Dame shot 30%. He had 8 of the 19 points. So again, you get to the efficiency from the drive and the pull-up game. He's at 30 or sub 30% in the two main areas that he usually dominates. That's not normal. That's not normal Damian Lillard. So if we get normal Damian Lillard in this game, Bucks win, to be honest with you. In the paint, GA and Brooke combined for 13 of the 15 points. They shot 100% in the paint again. Kuzma had 2. He did miss the one bunny. It is what it is. People were kind of ripping him for it, but it's whatever. It's not the end of the world. Now, I got to tell you. When watching this game, you saw the flagrant 2 foul on Amen Thompson. I wish I was joking. I really wish I was joking. People were literally saying that this would bring the ratings back and they need to get back to 90s basketball and they shouldn't have ejected him for this play. I'm not kidding. I saw that today on Twitter.
How do you think ratings are going to go when Victor Wembanyama, Giannis, and SGA are all missing the rest of the season because they got taken out at the rim?
Yeah.
And John Morant.
Yeah.
They're all out for the rest of the season.
Yeah.
How do you think ratings are going to be then?
Not great. Yeah. I saw a couple people saying that. I was like, oh my God. I wish this was a joke. I wish this was a dream. I wasn't shocked that he was ejected. He was apparently shocked. Did you see his face after he got ejected?
If you're around the head or neck area, you're getting tossed.
He said, how are you shocked?
If you're in the head or neck area, you're getting tossed.
Yeah, especially two arms. Jesus.
Yeah.
Didn't even try to hide it.
So the Bucks were 12 of 37 for 3, 32.4%. Not great. Correlates with losses, like I've said.
Mm-hmm.
AJ Green was 4-for-8. Kuzma was 1-for-4. Dame was 4-for-11. That's 36%. That's league average. That's a little bit below his average. And Brooke mm-hmm. Lopez was 1-for-6. Now, obviously not a good three-point shooting night. But yeah. We've got to stop acting like one bad night means that you need to be benched, means that you're washed, means that you need mm-hmm. to get into the paint, means that you need to stop playing the way that you've played here for 5 years because of one game. So what I did was I looked at Brook Lopez's three-point shooting percentage, which is 36.8, which is above the league average. It is also higher than the following players. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, Tyrese Maxey, Jason Tatum, Luka Doncic, LaMelo Ball, Devin Booker, Cade Cunningham, Anthony Davis, Franz Wagner, De'Aaron Fox, Victor Wembanyama, Trae Young, Joel Embiid, Paolo Banchero, Jaylen Brown, Jaren Jackson Jr., DeMar DeRozan, and Lauri Markkanen.
There's a lot of good players.
Brook Lopez shoots three-pointers better than all of those players. Get in the paint! He had a bad game! We got to stop being so reactionary. And I get it. It sucks that he had a bad game. The Bucks lost by 3 points on a day that Brook Lopez missed five threes.
Mm-hmm.
But that does not mean that Brook Lopez needs to change his entire role or be benched because of that one game. So, yes, the three at the end was too deep. Overall, he's still going to shoot a lot of threes.
Mm-hmm.
So, that, obviously, we talked about him screening, setting, spacing the floor. He still had 8 rebounds.
Yeah, he did.
That was second the most on the team.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, like, we've gotten to the point where Chris Middleton was traded, and now Brook Lopez is just the lightning rod of what people want to whine about.
Yep.
Imagine what happens when Brook Lopez hits free agency this summer, retires. Then who's the new lightning rod?
It's going to be Dame or Bobby.
It's probably going to be Dame. I agree with you.
Yeah.
Dude's averaging 25-8. So dumb.
Yeah. Like,
we have to get past the if one guy was different, all of our problems would be fixed thing. It has to stop.
Yep.
Overall, Bucks had 15 turnovers. Houston had 17 for what it's worth, but they allowed 17 points off turnovers. It's obviously not good, but it's not horrible.
Yeah.
It's not, we lost this game because of turnovers. It didn't help, but another thing that I saw was rebounding. Brook Lopez, get in the paint. We lost this game because of rebounding. Houston leads the NBA in offensive rebounds per game at 14.5.
They do.
That's literally their shtick.
Yep.
They had 16 offensive rebounds. That's 1.5 over their season average.
And I would like to point out that some of those offensive rebounds were coming against Giannis.
Oh, and I'll say this. A lot of them came against AJ Green. Because the Rockets, they present some weird matchups.
They're long.
Like Jabari Smith Jr. being guarded by AJ Green.
Yeah.
So, again, a lot of these actually came with Brook Lopez on the bench.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not some coaching malpractice. It's something the Rockets do well. So, do you have some stats yet?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So, I have the Bucks fourth quarter stats since the trade deadline. The trade deadline was February 6th. So I figured today would be a good day, 20 days since the trade deadline. Offensive rating, and this is just the fourth quarter for context, they have a 107.5 offensive rating. That's 17th in the NBA. Defensive rating, 105. That's 7th in the NBA. And they're decimal points away from being top 5. Net rating, they're plus 2.4. That's 14th in the NBA. I just want to let everybody know that everybody below the Bucks is either at zero or negative, and there's only one team that's at zero.
Wow.
The team that is 30th in fourth quarter net rating, take a guess. It's in the East.
Charlotte?
Nope.
Atlanta?
That's the right division, though.
Atlanta?
Nope.
Washington?
Nope.
Brooklyn?
We just played them. Just going to tell you that.
No way.
It's the Heat.
It's seriously the Heat?
They are 30th at negative 44.1.
Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. And everybody likes the Heat. The Heat have good players, right?
Philly was a good guess, too.
The Miami Heat are negative 44.1 in net rating in the fourth quarter since the trade deadline.
Whoa.
True shooting percentage. The Bucks are at 56.8. That is 15th in the NBA in the fourth quarter, right?
Mm-hmm.
They are 3.2% from being number 6.
Oh.
So I want people to relax on the offense. The offense is going to get there. You have to understand a few things. One, Giannis, Dame, minutes restriction, not fully healthy. Two, no Bobby Portis. What does he bring to this team? Also, we are trying to get players acclimated to this team from being traded to other teams.
Yeah.
Them showing the heart and the grit on defense should be all anybody cares about, because that's what has been missing since losing Jrue Holiday, right? That's all anybody's been talking about. The Bucks don't play defense. Bucks don't play defense. Bucks defense isn't the same. Them being good on defense with these new guys is great. Get Giannis, Dame healthy. Get Bobby back. Get these new players more acclimated with the system. The Bucks are back, baby. That's all these numbers told me. Also, the Heat are bad in the fourth quarter. They told me that as well.
This game kind of like inflated or deflated, I guess, those stats too. Because the Bucks were 3 for 18.
Yeah.
And 1 for 8 from the three-point line.
Yep.
They scored 12 points in the fourth quarter, all from Dame and Giannis. So,
healthy, dude.
It's not going to be a trend that I expect to continue, just a singular bad game. And it was, like you said, only offensively.
Yeah.
Because they only allowed the Rockets to score 15 in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, they just missed. Honestly, the Bucks just missed some open shots. Kuzma was open a few times. Brooke was open. He was a little deep. And even he said it after the game. He liked the look. He was just a little deep.
Yeah. Gary Trent Jr. and Kevin Porter Jr. Not great shooting nights. 2 for 6 and 2 for 7.
Yep.
But the last thing I got to say, I saw somebody on X say that Şengün was cooking Brooke Lopez.
Oh, Jesus.
He was 6 for 12.
Okay.
50% in a place where you should be shooting about 60. The Rockets as a team versus Brooke Lopez were 12 for 29. That's 41.2%.
Yep, he's getting cooked.
Yep, cooked. Trash on defense. Useless. Bench him. Play Sims.
Yeah, he's terrible. Trade him. Cut him.
Oh, like I said, it's been 5 years. People still don't understand his role. At this point, if it's going to make you unhappy, that's on you. Yeah, just learn basketball, and it won't bother you as much.
I agree.
All right, so the Bucks have 3 games between now and next week. They play the Nuggets tomorrow. They play at Dallas on Saturday, and they play at Atlanta on Tuesday. So we will have 3 games to discuss next week. Other than that, we are working on Brewers stuff, so keep an eye out for that. Other than that, if you don't have anything else, I will see you next Wednesday.
We also have our first Packers episode coming up soon. We have a free agent and trades episode. So
that is Tuesday.
That is.
Coming Tuesday is our free agency and trade episode. So Mike Spofford from Packers.com is also going to be joining us for that. So,
yes.
So I will see you Tuesday night.
I will see you Tuesday night as well.
All righty. Take care.
Peace.